Welcome to the Rookie Investor Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about buying into Berkshire Hathaway. Gareth, it's a good idea on the surface. I mean, why not outsource it to the best investor there is and save yourself some time?
But Phil, it's a textile company. Why should I invest in that?
For those who don't know, textile company was what Buffett bought into, back in the day, the 60s or something it might have been.
I think it was 60s. He claimed it was the worst investment mistake he made. He actually did his, he ended up buying the company over because he was angry at somebody offering a below par share price. And he basically said, no, right, I'm going to do this. And I think he claimed he lost something like $200 billion of... exactly, through buying the company as opposed to investing in insurance companies, which he would have done with the money he paid for that. So that's amazing funny. History to it, an amazing company. And yes, for anyone who is into investing, this is the one. This is Warren Buffett's vehicle for making himself a lot of money, and I suppose a lot of the big investors in it a lot of money. So maybe probably start with a bit of history, Phil. Slight history. So Berkshire Hathaway is a slightly funny structure, and forgive me if I get some of this wrong because it's not the kind of standard. It's not like he came along and created a company. In effect, they were a textile manufacturing company in Omaha, Nebraska. Think founded sometime around the 1830s. So they had a very long history leading up to long before Buffett got involved with the company. Now, he ended up getting involved, I think it was in the 50s or 60s, and saw that there was kind of a correlation between the share price improving and textile mills closing down. So he saw a little bit of an opportunity. He started to invest in this company, which was Berkshire Hathaway. At the time, it was a paper mill business, I think, largely. And as I mentioned, he ended up having a bit of a biffo with another person involved with the company, one of the management in the company. And through all of that, in effect, ended up putting a lot of money in to buy the company out randomly. And of course, what he was buying was a failing manufacturing company. I mean, this was the 60s in the US. Manufacturing was sort of dying. Textile manufacturing was dying. So he basically had this thing sitting on his lap that but wasn't making any money. So really what it's now become and what he's managed to shape it through is it's now it's like a holding company that owns outright quite a number. I was looking at what it owns outright. So it owns Duracell, Dairy Queen, Fruit of the Loom, Helzberg Diamonds, and NetJets. And then it also has significant shares in a lot of other companies, including obviously Coca-Cola is a big one, but Wells Fargo Bank, American Express, Apple, 5% of Apple, Bank of America, 6%. So this is basically a company he uses to invest. So he shaped it around from being a textile company where it lost a lot of money, and it is now this incredible vehicle that owns these incredibly valuable companies and owns significant shares in those valuable companies. So as investors, we can invest in his brain, in effect, and his ability to
pick, it's an interesting interesting twist too, because we get used to managed funds or exchange traded funds, and that's where you hand your money over and the manager actively invests in that. But this is slightly different, and these guys just go out and buy the stocks regardless of the shareholders' opinion, and then they sell shares in that company that owns shares in another company, which is
it's a very weird setup.
It's not that handing over. He's not managing your funds at all. He's running a company that buys into other companies. Which is really cool because utilize his brain, his leverage, his knowledge.
That's right.
And get those crazy returns.
And I think you've mentioned previously, Phil, we've talked about it. There's lots of weird things about it. Different things, maybe. Weird isn't the right word. Different things that Buffett and Charlie Munger. The two of them operate. I think you remember you mentioning they don't actually have a huge array of analysts. If any, they do a vast amount of their own work still, their own assessment work on companies. So they, what you're buying into really is Buffett and Munger. You're not really buying into a company, you're buying into their knowledge, because they're the ones that directly make the decision. And as Phil says, they just go out and they just buy companies that they see this opportunity in, value investing companies. So it's a very different setup to how almost any other fund, I think, would operate.
It's crazy, because another thing is that they don't have analysts or anything, because they want to, rely on their own information. They don't want to get caught up in that, that Wall Street kind of information vortex almost, where you get misleading information, people with different priorities telling you different things. So, they don't have anyone sell them any investment services. And they also live a very, very long way away from Wall Street.
Yeah.
So two of the most successful people in the world in investing. Because
they both live in Omaha. I mean, he's the Oracle of Omaha, yeah.
And I wasn't sure how far away that was from New York, and I looked at it the other day, and it's like a three-hour flight or something.
It's a really good point, actually. So they're not in that rat race of innuendo and gossip and rumor and whisper. They operate on their own little bubble in a way.
And the other thing he mentions is that he doesn't get caught up in all the hype and comparing himself to other people who are performing well.
Yeah.
And he's like, you see other people are getting around in nice cars or you're in New York and you can see all the designer stuff and you start to crave it. And he said that impacts your investing decision, trying to catch up or trying to flip money really quickly, which is just insane level of thinking, because I don't know too many other investors that think like that. They want to get amongst the hype and be a part of that Wall Street sort of craze.
Yeah, and we've spoken before about that. This is where you doing it yourself is far better, because you can put those controls in place. If you're putting your money in someone else's hands and that person is chasing that lifestyle, and that could be in Australia, it could be in Britain, it could be Canada, it could be the US, it doesn't matter. You know, these people always end up sort of congregating in the same area, and they all sort of look at each other and eye up and see what nice watch they have, see whatever they have. So, you know, these guys have separated completely from that. And I think it shows the benefit of doing that, but also of they have a very strict system as to how they choose stocks, which we might chat a little bit. We've covered it before, but I think it's worth in this discussion sort of bringing it up. Yeah. Sure. So we mentioned that they have ownership in businesses. They also, Berkshire is also an insurance company as well. So the insurance, largely property insurance, which is a vast and huge enterprise in the US and in elsewhere. So they have that continual money coming in as well. So it's not just that they have ownership in companies, they actually operate as a business themselves as well. So that's a little bit of a very loose background. Obviously, check out Wikipedia. There's a lot more in there. Plenty, but it's just worth, that just gives you a sense of what it is. So basically, fundamentally, it's Charles Munger and Warren Buffett's way to invest what they have in what they think is the right place to invest it in. Let's talk about the how the sort of stocks have operated, because they're really crazy. The option A is insane. But so there's option A and option B. Can you just explain a little bit of how that all works, Phil, to be honest? Because I'm not fully on top of all that.
Yeah, so they're just common shares, and that means voting rights, and you can release as a company, you can release as many common stock as you like. The general difference between the A and B is A means you have more voting rights, so you get more say over the company, about the management, about some of the direction, whereas B, you don't get the voting rights, but you still get the returns. What happened with Berkshire Hathaway is the current stock price of their A stock is $313,000, which is just...
close to that? I mean, that's the record for the highest stock. Like, that's a single stock. Imagine buying one stock, paying over $300,000.
Yeah, it's insane.
Is there anything you know of? Like, what's Google? What's Amazon?
Oh, they're all sub 2,000.
They're a couple of thousand. I mean, there's nothing I know. There's nothing close to this. Yeah. It's incredible. And it goes to show that you'll see there's a huge amount of big Bill Gates, a lot of people who have a lot of money have invested in Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett is known as the Oracle of Omaha, but he just seems to consistently get it right. So, you know, for anyone that is investing, if you want as safe a bet as you're ever going to have within the investing world, you'd have to say Berkshire Hathaway. Not that you're going to buy a share for that price. But anyway, sorry to interrupt. So you got the A stock, and that's a bit over $300,000
a share. $300,000,
And are they still available? Are they still being traded? Are they still, you can
pick up? Buy them. If someone wants to sell their stock, and you have the money to do it.
And I assume on an app like Stake, you could buy a percentage of that business.
In terms of...
like a part share.
Yeah, I don't know if Stake doing that. I know a few of the US companies are just getting into that fractional stock ownership.
That's how, they do, because that's how I've bought some stock. So if you're saying putting putting $100 or so on a stock, it won't just give you one, it'll give you 1 point whatever.
Okay.
So they do the fractions as well. Yeah. So there is still an opportunity. You don't need to be a multimillionaire to be able to get in there. We're just looking at the graph, which is absolutely amazeballs. Literally, the graph is just going up and up and up and up and up and up and up with a couple of tiny little dips. 2008 obviously dipped, as you'd expect. Other than that, he's just basically consistently has delivered. They've got a stable of incredible business, both businesses that they own and companies that they invest in. So they just have lots of money coming in, and they have an eye for the rights of the deal. So That's the A stock. The A stock. What does the B stock
look like? B stock is, because obviously they knew people weren't going to be able to, you know, it's good having this asset, but can you sell it if you're a shareholder? Yeah. How are you going to be able to sell it? So they've got B stock trading at $208 per share.
Yes.
And I'm not sure, I haven't studied the exact split what happened, but I dare say the guys that own stock, the A stock, would have got some of the B as well.
To sort of
liquidate their investment.
Yep.
Because imagine holding, you know, even 10 shares in Berkshire Hathaway. It looks good on paper, but who are you going to sell?
Who the hell's going to spend that money? Yeah, that's right. Who doesn't already own
liquidity part. And as I said before, the returns on that are, you know, you get the same buying in the same company. It's just the voting rights. And interesting info, when they released the B stock, they put in the letter, and this is the difference between these guys and other managers, is Buffett and Munger said that at this price, this stock's overvalued and we wouldn't buy it ourselves.
I love it.
Because they're just so honest in every
talk. And it's the difference, you know, if we're talking about that safe option. There really isn't many safer. I mean, these guys, they've led a consistently honest life, and they've managed to understand the market in a way that other people can. It's an incredible mix, which is really rare. So, let's probably talk a little bit more about the B stock, because what's the current current stock price, just out of interest? Because for people that are investing, you know, you might get a bit scared off if you're looking at that sort of 300,000 plus, particularly if you can't do the fractional investing. But there might be this might be a slightly more realistic way. Now, sorry, just to go back slightly before we get into this, with the A and B, are they both operating at the same level? They're linked to the same stuff. What I mean is, if the A goes up by 7%, B goes up. Is that how it works? Or is it a different part of the business that they've got stock in? Like, how does that process actually work?
Yeah, so the returns for the stock will be similar and everything, because it's the same company that you're buying into.
Mm.
So everything's going to be mirrored pretty much the same.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe the difference is, because it comes back to that supply and demand, at the end of the day, is if more people jump on and want to buy the B stock because they can afford it, then it might go up.
Price might go up more, or it might go down a bit quicker.
So there's two parts. Yeah. Fundamentally, they're both attached to the business, and they'll get the rewards of the business performing well. But there could be more demand for the B stock because it's more affordable.
Yep, sure. And so there might be more liquidity, which means more price fluctuations.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So with the B stock, then, what's the current share price?
$208.
Okay, and you said Buffett and Munger had said they think it's overvalued. What's Phil's assessment at the minute? So let's get into where they're standing. So let's concentrate on B, really, because I think that's the one where there is certainly more opportunity for a lot of people, a lot of normal people investing at $208.
So the thing with these stocks is, because they're value investors, and we might talk about that in a minute, they don't do well in bull markets. And by I mean they don't do well, they'll still return a profit, but they won't return one equivalent to the market. So I think one of the examples was, I think the market over the last 10 years done 350%, whereas
the market being the US market,
S&P 500, something like that. Whereas Berkshire Hathaway done like 280%.
Okay.
So
that's still quite a rise. I mean, if you imagine putting money in and getting 280% of that back, I mean, it's still a lot of money. But It's not to the same degree. But then, are they less impacted by downturns?
That's where they make the money, is the downturns.
Right, okay. Because of the value investing
process. Because of the
valuation,
Because, they're going with these stocks, and the way it works is, like, no one wants to own Coca-Cola when you've got something like Netflix soaring 400% a year.
Sure.
So these guys that own Coca-Cola, everyone dumps it and the price goes down in the bull market.
Yep.
And then they switch over to the tech stocks.
Sure.
So with that kind of preface, at the moment, it does look overvalued based on a few different things. We have a look at what's called the discounted cash flow. So that's having a look at all the cash flow that a company produces and discounting it to a to today's dollars. So they're looking at the cash flow they have in 5 years, and we're trying to put a value on it in today's terms.
Sure.
Coming up with that, they put a fair value of about $154 on the stock. And as we said, it's trading at $208.
So it's almost double the fair value.
Well, of the, what is it? 35% overvalued.
Sorry, 35%
is what it comes up to.
Yeah.
And then another metric, we look at the price to earnings ratio. So how much people are paying to get returns on that stock.
Yep.
It's at about 17.8 price to earnings, and the industry is 12.6.
Okay, so significantly above. Yeah, price to earnings is something that we do cover. It's actually the way that I look at investing. We run a 10-day investor challenge where that's our method of assessing companies, and it's straightforward. You can get a lot more complex into it, but it's a great way to get a sense of where companies' true value is, really, and that's the most important thing for investing, is understanding that. So 10-day investor challenge, we might have a quick sort of brief of that at the end, but that to me then looks like at the moment. Well, it's hard to know because it's Berkshire Hathaway. You sort of go, well, at some point it's going to end up picking up. I mean, that's, you know, yeah. What I mean is consistently over a longer period of time, you're going to end up making consistent amount of money back. I mean, that's not going to change.
Yeah, it's a long-term play. And they've been hammered with Heinz. They bought Heinz, massive amount, and that absolutely died.
Is that company hasn't folded?
No, it's not completely gone. It's just had a lot of dramatic issues. Drop.
Right,
and that's cost them a bit in terms of their performance.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, very, very much long-term sort of stock. Like sometimes we talk about short-terms, hold for 12 months, but these guys here really have to wait out a good 20 or so years.
Yeah, okay.
For that to average out and to be a good investment.
Yeah, right.
But more importantly than the stock price is probably doing your own assessment on the stocks that they're looking to buy. Like, does that make sense? Mm. Does that work? Well, you know, he said recently he thinks Apple's moved into a more everyday kind of company. He doesn't see it as a tech stock. He sees it part of everyday life.
Yep.
I'm not sure if I agree with that 100%.
Really?
I think because of the pricing model. Like, I don't see how you can have a premium price and an everyday item. Like, if you're buying a laptop for $2,500 and the economy goes shit, then, you know, people are going to cut that from their budget. Whereas these other investments like American Express, Coca-Cola, Wells Fargo, Johnson & Johnson, they're everyday companies.
They are genuine everyday companies. I don't know. I take up the point that iPhone is so ubiquitous, and perhaps what you'll get is you don't get people upgrading, but you get people retaining during a poor economic period. And then as that then picks up, they then buy.
They grow from there.
So I don't know. I would take it. I mean, I certainly... Apple is everywhere. You know, how many people, you know, I know we're both Android people, but a lot of, you know, I know huge numbers of people that they just use Apple products exclusively.
Yeah.
And it's very rare in any business to have that. But my sense is, I know what you're saying. You're right. A luxury product can't be, but mobile phones aren't really luxury anymore, even though they cost a lot of money. They're a necessity. Yeah. For one thing, and obviously there's computers is the other necessity that everyone has to have laptops. So that's interesting though. So can you look at the companies they're looking at investing in? Do they release newsletters and things that you can plug into, or how does that process sort of work, or do they just say after the fact?
They're after the fact.
Because they don't want anyone, I suppose, jumping in or doing whatever.
They don't want to do that because they have opportunities to sit on the board of companies. Like, I forget the company they bought in Asia, but one of their managers went over there, negotiated a certain percentage, and then he sits on the board of that company. So that's one of their strategies. They sit on the board so they can dictate the strategic direction of the company, and that's one of his...
Yeah, right.
Like, we can't replicate that.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, we could give it a go.
Oh, wow. This is,
Coca-Cola, we're going to buy $100 worth of stock.
No, we're going to, break in and literally sit in their boardroom when no one else is there. We could be like, yeah, we're on the board. You know what I mean?
That'd be a great experiment.
That'd be awesome. Oh, I don't know. You're probably like,
where's the interns?
Where's Coca-Cola headquartered? Atlanta, is it?
No idea.
Yes, you do, Phil. You've looked into
this. I've got no idea. Pepsi
Do you? Like, you're so weird. That's where the stock price is at the minute. So obviously this is a longer term game, as Phil was saying, particularly with Berkshire Hathaway. I think as closely as you can unequivocally say, you'll end up coming on top over a certain period of time. I think this is one of the companies you'd say is fairly risk-free. But yes, if you're in it to make money quicker, it's probably not necessarily the right way to go. It's almost you'd have it as you have it as part of your stock portfolio, but it's a percentage. It's your safe bet percentage that you know will over time will grow, but it's not the fast and easy stocks that can end up bringing money in a quicker way. Do you want to talk about value investing just while we're, because I think it's quite important. We have actually done you'll find a podcast on our podcast list, which is exclusively about value investing, but I think it's worth bringing it up because it is the means in which Berkshire Hathaway invests. Warren Buffett is his preferred.
Yeah, so just before we go, we're running a webinar on Wednesday.
Yep.
go to cheekyinvestor.com/live webinar.
Do it.
And that's going to be on how to be a value investor. So we're going to go in a lot more detail over an hour. But to give you an idea, we'll go into the history of value investing. So I started with this guy called Benjamin Graham. And this was back in the 20s, and he just seen all this chaos in the markets. Yep. He's like, these guys are just guessing and speculating. Surely there's got to be a systematic way to put a dollar value on a stock.
Mm.
And at the time, he worked in banking, and he determined whether people got loans or not. So he'd look at the size of the house they wanted to buy, their income, their debt, and he kind of came up with a methodology to apply that to stock investing.
Yeah, okay.
He comes up with what's called an intrinsic value, and that's the actual value of anything really, but of a stock. So if you have a computer, for example, you might pull it apart and you might actually only have $100 worth of stuff that's gone in there, but you paid a grand for it. So the intrinsic value is $100, $1,000 is what you paid.
Sure.
Now, value investor principle is to buy a dollar for 50 cents and then sell it later for a dollar.
Yep.
So you find something that's undervalued. What Graham done is he took it to an extent where he found like kind of junk stocks, like they'd been too far back, or he went into markets that weren't great. And his thing was finding fair companies at a great price.
Yes.
And then Warren Buffett was actually one of his employees, one of his
Where it comes from, yeah, right? Yeah. Okay.
He was like an apprentice with him, one of his junior advisors. So he learned everything about that, and they took on that investment approach, and then he ended up buying Berkshire Hathaway, and Benjamin Graham didn't want it. He didn't think it met the criteria, and he ended up going with that. Not sure how he met Charlie Munger or how he came into it, but he's actually probably, maybe he's smarter. Charlie Munger, he's a genius. He said, how about we flip it? Rather than having fair companies at a great price, let's get great companies at a fair price.
Yeah.
So rather than buying these companies that were kind of okay at a bargain price, they're buying these really superior companies at a fair price.
Yeah.
So that's how that sort of works. And they look at the assets, and you know, a lot of people talk about property because it's got an intrinsic value, and I know Mark Boris says property never goes to zero.
Yes.
Which is fair, but I can tell you now, a company never goes bankrupt when they have no debt. Or if they have far more assets than they do liabilities, that company's not going.
It can never bankrupt. Yeah, that's right.
Because you sell all the assets, pay the debt, and you pay out your shareholders. So that's the aspect that you look at for value investing.
And is that the price to earnings ratio then? How does that play in as part of that? Not to get into too much detail, we don't give too much.
Yeah, we cover this in the webinar.
Bag of secrets away, but
we cover this in the webinar, and it looks at the book value per share. So just briefly, that's taking your assets minus the liabilities, and then you divide what's left by how many shareholders.
Yep.
So let's say we've got 100 million, 200 million in assets, 100 million in liabilities.
Yep.
We take that away, we've got $100 million left over. And then if we've got a million shareholders, we divide 100 million by a million, that equals $100. And that means that if the company stopped operating or had to close up and sell everything, then shareholders would only get $100 per share, mate.
Yep.
So if that company was trading at $50 per share, then that'd be a value.
Yep.
Because you're buying, so it's worth $100 a share, you're buying it for $50.
Yeah.
But if it was trading at $200 per share, then you're not guaranteed
it's all value.
So that's one kind of aspect.
There's a lot more in it, and the webinar covers a lot more of it, but that gives you a sense of the process. So it's an interesting mindset. It's a kind of an honest mindset in a way. They're not trying to fiddle the system. They're not trying to take chances. They're just going through this systematic process of analyzing companies, and they come out with a figure at the end of that. Obviously, it's not as simple as that, but that's the very simple sort of premise of what it is. And on that basis, they've managed to fairly consistent. I'm sure they've had Duff. I mean, Heinz is one, but you know, they've pretty consistently managed to hit stocks.
I think
they've
more than doubled the market return over like 40 years.
Yeah,
or
right.
Something.
Yeah. Which is incredible. Incredible for any company. I don't think there's anyone that would match them or probably even come close.
Oh, like you can get your tech companies that have done it in 10 years.
Yeah, that's right. A short period of time. Yeah. And in such a range of different stocks as well.
The other thing with value investing that people don't realize is you think it's kind of a bit boring because you're buying those boring companies. You're not jumping on, getting onto like your Netflix or Amazon.
Mm.
But it takes some guts to make some of those decisions because you've got to buy these stocks when they're out of favor. And Munger bought bank stocks in 2009, right in the craziness of the GFC.
Why weren't we? Cheeky Investor needed to be here then, because we would have been saying to people, now is the bloody time to buy bank stocks.
I was like 20, I didn't know what was going on.
Man, I know. Yeah, I was drunk probably. It's likely I was drunk at that point. And look, you look back now and you go, oh, well, of course everything bounded back and everything's going far better than it was. But not at the time, at the time, it was doomsday stuff. And, you know, even we've spoken before about property and you know, the stock market. Australia wasn't hit so much in terms of property, but I'm from Ireland and that was hit quite badly. And property hasn't returned back to the levels, to the price levels, amazingly, that it was just prior to the crash. And that's 10 years later almost. Yet the stock market has broken through so many sort of record points in that period after the stock market. So that's just a very simple example of the fact that the stock market, you know, has an ability to rebound, and in a way is a better option than property, you know, when it comes to things like that. But look, I think we've sort of covered it all again. We almost tried to cover it a lot in half an hour. That's our role. We don't want to bore you too much. This is actually the first one as well we're recording. So if you're listening on the podcast, thank you. And if you go to our YouTube channel,
you can see our faces.
Cheeky Investor. You can see what our beautiful faces look like.
I don't have that outstanding.
And if you're watching our horrible faces on YouTube, you can listen to our beautiful voices on the podcast. So if you sort of close your eyes and close your, I don't know, do something, you'll be able to get a generally good picture. But overall, Phil, I think we'd say Berkshire Hathaway is one to look at as a longer-term investment.
Oh, it always is. Yeah. And particularly, I think it's about to get really interesting. We've been on the longest bull market ever. And, you know, in the last 10 years, I think last year it went down by about 20%, but that was only a short period of time.
Yep.
And that's where these guys really shine, in the value investing, is when things start to go. Because anyone can make money in a bull market.
Yeah.
It's what happens when we're in a bear market and shit hits a fan.
The cream comes to the top. So thank you all for listening. And just before we go, very quick one. You know we're not heavy on the advertising, but yeah, we've got our webinar, which is on...
cheekyinvestor.com/live webinar.
Perfect.
Wednesday, October 23, 8 o'clock, and that's Australian time, Sydney time.
Yep, so Eastern Standard Time. So it's all about value investing, which is, if you look around, is a really big thing at the minute for some of the reasons that Phil pointed out, and obviously there's people being very successful with it. We've given you like a taste of what it's about, but actually Phil goes into some really incredibly helpful formulae and tools and places where you can go to find information.
Oh, brilliant. Pull up some reports and go through it.
Yep, and so you literally will, you know, it's an over-the-shoulder type thing where you'll be able to sit there and Phil will go through looking at companies and you'll understand exactly what he's doing. And as I said, it's the method that we teach in the 10-Day Investor Challenge, which you can find also on our website. If you just go into the cheekyinvestor.com, it's the Rookie Investor Challenge is what it's called, and it's on the homepage. You can click in. It's $27, but it's an incredibly good. It's 10 days of videos, which will basically take you from zero in terms of investor to actually investing at the end. We push you to invest at the end, and lots of people have done it. And generally, we've gotten really good feedback. People get really excited because they're actually doing it. They've been pushed to do it. So make sure to go on our website, check out all that. So we've got a couple of other things on there, but the webinar is definitely worth watching if you've got any interest in Berkshire Hathaway, in making money through investing or in value investing. So thank you all for listening, and we'll check you out next week.
That's good.
Thank you.